This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. To New South Wales, to Sydney, to Jeremy Zakas, to close the chapter on the tennis star, superstar Djokovic. Jeremy, a very good day to you. Given that it is Monday morning your time, these events happened last night your time. Djokovic has left the country. Under what circumstances and what is his future in Australia? Good evening to you.
G'day, John. Yes, finally, the Djokovic saga is over. At 5:47 p.m. last night, the federal court judge handed his decision down, saying that Djokovic's appeal against his previous cancellation of his visa, which was the second time his visa to Australia had been cancelled, was effectively inadmissible. So Djokovic had no legs to stand on in going against our immigration minister, saying that the immigration minister had acted inappropriately in issuing the second cancellation. And then within hours of the judge's decree, it's 5:47 p.m. with no contest from either side, from Djokovic's lawyers or the government's lawyers, Djokovic was finally on the plane and out of Australia. And what we've been told is that he is now going to Dubai. But for Djokovic, this is only really the start of his problems here in Australia, because when you get a visa cancellation, you have 3 years where you really can't come back to Australia unless you apply for an exemption. So right now, when he goes back, in order to play in Australian Opens in the next 3 years, he is going to actually have to talk to the Australian federal government, going to have to submit a request to have an exemption, and going to have to go through effectively another set of legal challenges to get back in.
The New York Times headline, with dripping irony, as the Australian Open, at the Australian Open, everyone not named Djokovic is ready to star. So you take away the longtime reigning champion and we'll have young people come forward.
We will, we will. In fact, with Djokovic out now, the what was originally the number five seed, a relatively unknown player, is now going to be in the number one position, which means, you're right, what actually happens without the world number one there, we get a group of younger players who effectively would have been pushed down the ranking list coming up on this first day of play, and they could effectively be some of the new rising stars. So this whole saga, as much as we've lamented it over the last 10 days here in Australia, it's actually good for tennis internationally, and certainly the Australian Open.
I was pleased to see that one of the places that the tennis stars practice is the Rod Laver practice field or tennis court, Rod Laver. I mention that because in my distant memory, that's the first time I ever heard of Australia, was Rod Laver, who was your tennis champion. And for some reason, I remember maybe the 1960s or 50s when I first heard about Australian tennis. He was a global superstar, but really a person who invited young people in America into Australia. And I had to get used to the concept that you were a continent and that you were in another part of the world that had different seasons. So that when I was hearing about you in the fall, it was your springtime. It was Rod Laver who introduced me. Do you remember growing up with Rod Laver's name commonplace in your school?
I do, John. The Rod Laver Arena there in Melbourne is almost holy ground for tennis. And effectively, Rod was not only a big proponent of tennis in Australia here. I mean, certainly when I grew up in Adelaide, South Australia, we had clinics which effectively were sponsored by Rod Laver and his organisation. So for us young kids, we got introduced to tennis through Rod Laver's organizations. But growing up, and even now, Rod Laver is a name that is really synonymous with tennis, because you're correct. He really did bring the international tennis field to Australia and also Australia to the world. So Rod Laver Arena is really the only place you could have the Australian Open, because it really is that hallowed ground.
Mentioning Rod Laver, because tennis is much bigger than one grumpy Serbian superstar who decided he could deceive Australia. Now, there's other news that's part of this story, because the Djokovic story is a story of COVID-19 and the rules for me and not for thee, that sort of thing, because we see the same phenomenon going on in London now about Boris Johnson and his government. However, what is new to me is the empty shells of Australia, and I'm reading that it's not getting better. Is shopping difficult in New South Wales?
Shopping is difficult, and going to the store itself, it's really hit and miss. You can get some products, especially some meat products, chicken in particular, but really, you know, 9 times out of 10 now, you won't be able to get chicken when you want to. You can't get the red meats. Fresh produce as well is completely off the shelf. Toilet paper is a funny one. Some days it's not there, some days it is, but it's all coming down to the transport industry being hit hard by COVID now, with Omicron going through the community. The trucks just can't get the produce to the shelves, and a lot of Australia is starting to hurt. It's not just New South Wales, it's Victoria, it's Queensland, it's the Australian Capital Territory, but we're really having these supply shortages. And the unfortunate thing is, even with the relaxation of the rules with regards to isolation for workers, and effectively, if you do test positive for COVID, you can go back to work fairly quickly now, that's still not going to help the supply chain. It could be at least a week, 2 weeks before we get back to really where we were before. And people are panic buying. They are buying extra meat. They are putting meat in the freezer. So that's also not helping right now. So unfortunately, once again, we're facing a lot of shortages.
Yes, some weeks ago there was a wonderful headline about how you were worried about no lamb on Australia Day. Now, no longer are they preaching that concern. It's just, you know, you will have lamb on Australia Day. Also related to the whole story of Australia and the virus is ashes. Now, last night, my time, very late, I read the Telegraph. Who knows why in the middle of the night I want to read the Telegraph on ashes. You've instructed me that I should read these things. I got totally lost to how the reporter in London was explaining the match that's the test that's going on in Hobart, Tasmania now. Is England doing better? I couldn't tell because they had some incredible obstacle to overcome, scoring some 100 runs or so in the next before they're out again. So is the final test, is England balancing it out in some fashion?
Yes, John, and I'm glad you read the Daily Telly, because that's one of my go-to sources for cricket as well. And you're right. What we're seeing now is England needs to score, I believe it's 151 or 171 at least to win. And they need to do it over the next few batsmen, because if they don't, they will still be trailing Australia. And this is the fifth test in the five test series. And now, if we go back, Australia has won the Ashes 3-0 already. Ironically, there was a draw in the fourth test, so England mathematically managed to actually draw with Australia, but that doesn't count as a win, so it's still 3-0 to Australia. But in this final session, England has a glimmer of hope. England could actually win if they can get at least 151, but they still have to make 151. And as we've seen them the whole series, they've barely been able to do that on a good day, and with all none of their batsmen out. So, I mean, John, I'd like to say that there is some competition here, but we think the English side's about to not quite meet standards.
Well, what this Ashes contest has done is introduce me to the language of cricket. I have a lot to learn, but at least I've started down the road of understanding what it means to be, well, in your parlance, nasty, nasty, playing nasty. I never understood that word in terms of cricket. Now, finally, a big story here in these last days, and we haven't gotten to it because of the Serbian superstar, is the sudden announcement of a Japan-Australia defense pact. Was that a surprise to the Australian citizenry?
Yes, that was. And I think it was partly a surprise, because the news cycle was, you know, focused on Djokovic and focused on a lot of the COVID stories. But it was a pleasant surprise. It was one of those stories where Japan has been an ally for so long, and we have worked with Japan in the past, but now it's really been consolidated as a defense pact. We don't know a lot of details yet. The story is still coming out, certainly in the media, but it does look very promising, and it looks like one of the regional superpowers here in Asia is going to work with us quite closely. So honestly, John, this is one of the happy news stories here in Australia we've had for a long time.
Jeremy Zakas, he's in New South Wales, Sydney. The empty shelves will abate, but not immediately. And Djokovic is on to his fate, which is a happy one. He's a superstar, just not in Australia right now. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.